Support for The Trend comes from members of the Local Programming Fund. I'm your host, Cass Harrington. We're taking a look at how neighboring towns are investing in arts funding and development projects with the intent of increasing the quality of life, something that millennials in particular prize when deciding where to live. First, let's take a trip to Jasper to talk with Mayor Terry Seitz and the Director of Community Development and Planning, Darla Blasey, about how Jasper's commitment to the arts has created fertile ground for a new development in the area.
Before I jump into my first question, I just wanted to make it known to the listeners that we are sitting in the middle of a train car, a lovely train car, if I might say, leather seats and beautiful accessories. Can you tell me a little bit about this train and maybe how it relates to some new projects Jasper is diving into?
I'd be glad to. We're sitting in one of the cars that is operated under the name Spirit of Jasper. And since we're a contemporary society, we'll say spiritofjasper.com. Mm-hmm. And that will give you an idea and look at some galleries. The Spirit of Jasper is an extension of what began approximately 13 years ago with a vision of a river walk in Jasper, turned into a redevelopment Old Jasper Action Coalition, which is a group of citizens, became a 501c3, and we're a driving force behind development of a lot of the things that you see, including the Spirit of Jasper. We rebuilt a depot to scale to the depot that used to be here, and that's right next to us. We rebuilt a city mill from scratch that is, has some similarities to mills. Jasper one time had five different mills on the river, three different mills at one time, and one was rebuilt. Yes, and we can say Abraham Lincoln visited this one, and his father did not pay for his feed. He actually built a desk for the owner of the mill, and it's here in the county. It's quite beautiful. And then the Spirit of Jasper, we acquired train cars and an engine from Crane Naval Weapons Center. They were basically used to haul some people, but more or less materials. In fact, one of them has a history of being a car that hauled corpses, hauled fallen soldiers in World War One, wow. World War Two, and Korea. Obviously, we use the double door now rather than for coffin. We bring our catering meals in through those doors, so they are still being used. Oh, but that's the history of the trains. They were gutted. Our local manufacturers and well-wishers and benefactors paid for each of them to be artistically and architecturally rebuilt. The one you're in now is a lounge car, a parlor car. I always get the two misnamed, but it's leather seats. It is burled lumber and wood all around. It has a beautiful halogen lighting, and it rolls. The Spirit of Jasper actually runs a season. We have been virtually sold out the last two seasons once we announced in May, and we're sold out the rest of 2013, but we're preparing for 2014. So it's just it fits in as an asset, and you are in something that no other city has to offer.
No other city.
No other city that I know of, and no one, I promise you, will not have these cars look like these. There are no other cars that look like these.
I feel transported to 1920s. Part of this visioning plan involves a couple structures we can see right outside the window, nearly 500,000 square feet of unused space. They're empty factories. Could you
talk
about
this? Former factory buildings. Actually, the one right outside the window was the former Jasper Cabinet. They made and still make, that name exists, fine furniture, fine cabinetry for the home. And this factory building has been sitting vacant for about 10 years now. And the current owner is a hotelier by trade. And part of the plan that we're looking at is how to take this building, because structurally it is sound. Now, aesthetically, it doesn't look that pleasing to the eye, but it has a lot of good bones in it. And so how do you take that and transform it into a new use, which in the case of our plan is recommended a possible hotel, 80-room hotel, with some of the structures on the backside by the riverbank coming down and actually adding another walkway, another connecting path to our riverwalk, so you have a loop between the two bridges.
Then actually, as you look between the train and the building, this we actually will be part of our plan that this will become a pedestrian street. So all of a sudden we've created a streetscape on this side of the track, and it would connect to an existing street called Second Street and become a walking Second Street, more or less to give a front door to our depot, a front door to this factory for whatever mixed use it may become. And so that's part of it as well. And then on the east end of this, there is a call for something called the Patoka steps that the street to our north would end up, have everything essentially end up at the river with a purpose, not just a bunch of trees or shrubs or whatever else, but have a purpose for it. We have a low-banked river, so it's not something like the Ohio that you can't get to. You can actually get to this very easily. To have a purpose for things that come to the river to actually end at the river, and that's part of this vision.
Listening to The Trend on 88.3 WNIN FM. Support for the program today comes from Rabin Tire and Auto Service, a proud sponsor of WNIN programming. Rabin offers a selection of tire brands, including Michelin and Goodyear, along with complete auto service and recommended maintenance by trained technicians. Information on the web at RabinTire.com. I'm Cass Harrington, talking to Jasper Mayor Terry Seitz and Director of Community Development and Planning Darla Blasey. We're inside of the Spirit of Jasper, an updated vintage passenger train.
The one thing that's very unique is that you don't have a chance to call another mayor and go, hey, tell me about your train. How do you do things?
Well, that's interesting that you are maintaining, like you said, the bones of this town. I mean, we're on this lovely train. Are you also trying to preserve that historical charm or just the sustainable reuse of buildings? Is that something that's been talked about?
I think yes. I mean, I think we need to look at, you know, some the green initiatives. So, what this building could become in terms of. You know, there's all kinds of programs out there now for LEED certified buildings when it comes to how they could be rehabbed. And so, yes.
We hope that our investment of funds, the private sector, the not-for-profit, the city up until this point, there's probably been maybe $6 million of investment. Not all in this area. Some have been the Los Bravos family of restaurants has its largest and most profitable restaurant that built a you know, magnificent structure right on the Riverwalk, just a little bit further down. But to build off of that investment also, we have a coffee shop, Azura Grill. It's a grill. It was a former gas station. And it's now, they've expanded as a coffee shop. So to play off those private investments and to really elevate and things to have more, to have the public still play a role in becoming a very public space around it, but to leverage for private investment.
I think that was something that was very exciting about this whole planning process, which began back in January, is that we engaged the community and we had two public sessions, and those were very well attended. For a community our size, we had almost 200 to the last one, and the first one had about 130, 140 people. And in attendance, they were helping us to shape what could these areas be by talking about what they would like to see. I mean, they see the possibilities of restaurants, they see the possibility of entertainment venues.
Connecting our downtown square, which is extraordinary, to this riverfront. Right now we have a little bit of a gap in between. They're connected, there are sidewalks, but there's no connecting methodology, pathways, streetscape, things like that. And those connections, our public told us, are very, very important. And those things don't play out tomorrow. We know that this is not an overnight investment, nor is it an overnight achievement, but we're setting the stage for that and actually having the city itself with public input playing a very strong role with respect and with thanks to all that's been done before from those who have gotten us to this point.
So would you say that public input, I mean, what is the biggest factor in keeping the momentum, public support and input, or is it that private investment?
Well, it definitely will be private investment. I mean, we want private investment to drive some of these major projects. But we, in this plan, we're actually going to have an implementation section in the plan so that smaller projects could be undertaken by a nonprofit organization, just a group of citizens. You know, of course, the city will have some things that, you know, will come into from an infrastructure standpoint. But that private investment, we definitely want to work hand in hand with those folks that can see that vision and help to create that reality.
That was Mayor Terry Seitz and Director of Community Development and Planning Darla Blasey in Jasper. We're talking about arts funding and economic development on today's Trend. Jasper is the only town in Indiana and one of a few across the country that has a city government department set aside for the arts. Here's Jasper Arts Board President Mike Jones.
Jasper is a particularly interesting case because Jasper Arts, it has its own separate department. The arts has its own department in city government. I mean, that's the only case in Indiana, let alone maybe two or three, like you said, other occasions in the country.
Yes, we are very fortunate in the fact that the city thinks enough of the arts for its citizenry that it wants to support art ventures, and they also would like to keep ticket prices very reasonable so people can afford to come out and see various shows. In point of fact, we just had Eugenia Zuckerman this past Friday, was here with two other friends for a backstage concert. And Eugenia, if you know her at all, is on CBS Sunday mornings with regularity playing the flute. Mm-hmm. So here you have quality programming, and people can like reach out and just touch someone like that right here locally.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you said that the arts department has subcommittees?
We do. There is the Arts Commission, which there are 11 members of that commission. And then there's a performing arts series, there's a visual arts committee, there's an education committee, because we also put at least one, and we try for two, art-related performances or workshops into every school in town so that every child in the Jasper school system and even the two local parochial schools have an arts exposure during the school year.
And it's high-quality workshops for those students.
They are. In addition, we are members of the Kennedy Center Partnership, and so we have people from New York come in and do workshops for the teachers, and that's set up to teach teachers how to use the arts when they're teaching something like science or math, something that you wouldn't really expect. You might see a correlation with English or in some foreign language, and certainly with theater arts, but theater or art in math, how's that work out? You know, so that's, they come in and they help us do that. Mm-hmm. And the teachers like it a great deal.
Support for WNIN comes from the Granola Jar Cafe and Bakery, celebrating their holiday open house on Saturday, October 19th from noon to 3. Samples of appetizers, sides, and desserts will be available, as well as info about holiday catering and gift baskets, located at Mount Pleasant Road just off Highway 41 North in Evansville. More information on their Facebook page. Support also comes in part from Evansville Day School, partnering with parents to offer a student-centered education program for students junior pre-kindergarten through 12th grade. More information at evansvilledayschool.org or at 812-476-3039.
Well, it sounds like there are long-term benefits in terms of economics. But has there been a quick, immediate turnaround to this investment? Kind of specific examples of things in the community that you could say, yeah, that's because we invested in art, or this happened because we made arts funding a priority.
I don't know that one can actually draw a specific correlation to certain things like that, but I do know that there are many, many students who have gone on to major in music, major in art, are designers, design furniture, design clothing, and they're doing very well. I mean, the same way that when I was teaching theater, I mean, I didn't expect any of my students to go out and wow Broadway, but there's quite a few of them out there that are working in the business, which is very nice to hear and very nice to see. Art makes people think differently. And just from a business perspective, you want people to be able to think outside the box. And artists tend to do that.
Well, and back to quality of life, has that had implications or effects on Memorial Hospital?
Oh, yeah. The arts department, I think, is one of the factors that helps us recruit physicians and staff members. When we want to find a doctor who wants to, we need a doctor of a particular kind, a dermatologist or a gastroenterologist or something like that. They may look at a little red dot in southern Indiana and say, well, why would I want to go to Jasper, Indiana? It's in the middle of nowhere. But when they get here and they find that we have a quality facility and they find out, wow, you can get people like Eugenia Zuckerman or Clint Black or the Blues Brothers or some other quality name talent right here, then, yeah, I can get that here, and this is a great place for me to raise my kids. And so it becomes a draw for some of our recruiting.
So an indirect correlation with art and good health care, possibly.
Well, it is. I'd like to say it is, sure. We have a very good hospital here.
All right. Well, thank you, and thanks for having us today.
Oh, thank you for asking me.
That was Mike Jones, the board president of Jasper Arts and the executive director of the Memorial Hospital Foundation. I'm Cass Harrington, and you're listening to The Trend. We heard from a few people from Jasper City government who are invested in arts funding and development, but how do the artists actually fare in this town? Here's Claire Bees and Romy Kissel, two lifelong friends who create pottery and mosaics in their studio and in public spaces.
My name is Claire Bees, and I am an artist, and I work with clay.
Romy Kissel, artist, and work with clay.
Well, I think it's you are very interesting, not just in the art you produce. You're looking at different mediums and techniques, but you two are friends, which is really intriguing to me. How have you been able to sustain that friendship and work together in the same studio?
Well, we go back we have a lot of history. So our moms were friends growing up in Jasper, and then our dads were friends growing up in Ferdinand, and then they were in each other's weddings, and then Romy and I are 3 weeks apart in age. And so we grew up, grade school, and then in high school we became really good friends because we were both
in art classes together.
And we both kind of went off and did our own thing, and then we both came back to Jasper. And
even though Claire was the one friend I thought would never come back to Jasper, because she did a lot more traveling, went to New York and Europe, and ended up back here anyway. So
yeah, and I love it. I really think you have to go away to appreciate where you came from. So or it did help me. I shouldn't say everybody. You have to do it, but it really. So anyway, Romy and I have been together producing artwork for almost 18 years now. Mm-hmm. And we still get along.
I don't know.
Yeah, we're both pretty easygoing.
Yeah.
And
you don't get angry over broken pottery?
No.
Pretty understanding about that.
Yeah, yeah.
So we are here in the back of a store, nice little art boutique, where your art is on sale. But also we're profiling Jasper and Jasper's art community, arts funding, arts education. So maybe a little background from you growing up here. How was arts education part of your childhood and your development?
I always thought it was a part of my life. I didn't really realize if it was within the education system or not. There was always the Crimp Gallery, which I'm finding out is unusual for a city to actually support a gallery, which is interesting in itself. I have to say one of my favorite things when I was little was going over to Romy's house because her mom was an artist, and she would always have projects for us.
And my mom's an artist as well, so.
Yeah.
So it's something that you grew up with without recognizing was something
that was... Yeah, it was just around
was,
us yeah. all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. And I had a creek behind my house, and I would go dig the clay out of the out of the creek bed and make little animals.
Mm-hmm. And my mom then had a little potter's wheel. And
yeah.
So we did do clay very early.
Yeah, yeah. And our high school teachers were wonderful. Mr. Shum and, well, Tom Shum and Fred Roberts were wonderful. And they had a wonderful art program in the high school. And they really encouraged that this could be a part of your life. I mean, growing up, you know, I always thought art would be my hobby. I never thought it would be my livelihood.
Well, it is your livelihood, and you've got some national acclaim for it. But at what point in your life or your career did you realize that Jasper is doing something spectacular in a way, in terms of art?
I think they really do try to educate or bring art to the schools and to people. Like I know I just signed a permission slip for my sixth grader, and he's going out to the Civic Auditorium to see a production. You know, most of art, I don't know about most, but a lot of families, you know, that's just not something they do for family entertainment. So it's wonderful that the schools can bring this to the children. I think, and I don't know if other cities do that or not, but I think Jasper is really good about bringing it to the kids.
Yeah, I think they try to incorporate it into their education and awareness and exposure to it. I think they do a good job with that.
Yeah.
You're listening to The Trend on 88.3 WNIN. We're in the middle of our fall pledge drive, and the program you're listening to right now, The Trend, is made possible because of listener support. WNIN is working hard to create more thoughtful local news content, both on the air with news and here on The Trend with long-form conversations. I hope you'll make the pledge and support and help us grow as a station and a service to our community. The numbers to call are 812-423-5678 or toll-free 1-800-264-9646 or go online wnin.org. Now back to my conversation with Claire Bees and Romy Kissel, two artists in Jasper.
And does the city do anything for you two in terms of helping you be successful in the community?
We just had a show out at the Crip Gallery, a solo show last November, and that was great exposure. And that's all funded. You know, we didn't have to pay to, like, rent the space, or we applied and, you know, got accepted and had a show. So, yeah, I mean, that's all funded through the community to have shows.
And they do have other, you know, just the chalk walk is a great thing for the kids. Mm-hmm. And they always, you know, the Strassenfest has a little art market. And you can sell your stuff at the farmer's market. So there's definitely opportunities to sell your works.
Why is it important, I mean, not just to support the arts, but to support artists? What does that contribute to a community?
I think, you know, by... supporting, buying, not only buying, but just going to shows and seeing their stuff. Not everybody can afford to buy something, but I mean, it does show community support and awareness and, you know, that it's appreciated. I mean, we come from a town of craftsmen for the furniture industry. That's an art too, you know, even though, and I think that's what some of the appreciation we found. People have worked in this community and done that type of work. So I think they understand what it takes to make things, you know.
I believe the community really appreciates
handcrafted,
mm-hmm. handmade.
Mm-hmm. I guess what I mean in terms of, you know, I've seen you all are involved in the communities in more ways than just your work. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Well, one project we've been working on lately is through the high school. We've been trying to get a senior project, and we've been working with some other friends, and so it's ended up that it's been more of an art project in a way.
We did a library project.
Oh yeah,
in Ferdinand, And Du Bois.
And Du Bois.
Right. That and, we had community. It wasn't just kids, actually. One group was children. And we made art that went into the library, public library.
Yeah. And the kids, we had tiles done by kids and adults, so it turned out really nice. Mm-hmm. And
Holy Family, we've done a project with the kids. They have a charity auction, and so we had all the kids make a tile again, then we put it together, and then they auctioned it off. So I think they really enjoyed that, and they got to see how things are made and then how you can sell them, make money, you know? It's kind of interesting.
Yeah. Well, what about in terms of attracting people here or keeping people here? How does art do that?
I think we have a lot of people coming in that are from, that get hired by the bigger companies in town. And, you know, they're used to entertaining or getting entertained. And so I think maybe Jasper, you have to look a little deeper to find where the art is, but it is there, just taking advantage of what is offered locally through food or art, just the nature, just the surroundings. I think Jasper has a lot to offer.
What does Jasper offer that another town doesn't?
The opportunity to have a gallery, and there's art in public spaces too that can be appreciated. Like the hospital, they had a lot of work created by, Zach Dawkins. And it's really nice, beautiful.
What about with the new projects the city is doing in terms of development and their visioning process? Do you see that as an opportunity?
I think it's wonderful how it's just trying to get a hold on what the future, what's going to happen. Just, there's talk about what can be done with this space and how they're going to use it. And they're getting a lot of community involvement in it. I think it's just wonderful how they're trying to look in the future, because so often I feel cities or agencies are looking just right at what is needed at this point. They don't. I think Jasper's really trying to look into the future of what this city needs and how it can hold on to the youth and bring these people back to keep it a strong city.
Do you feel like the city is supporting you as an artist?
Very much. I think that that the community is for us. I feel that they are willing to do what it takes to get us, to get any artist able to make a living, to just to,
yeah,
we find support.
Yeah, we have a lot of loyal people who have bought from us, and we've been doing this 18 years, and I mean, the same people are still around, still buying from us for 18 years.
And they
years,
tell their
you know?
Friends, and they yeah. bring in their relatives, and they yeah. tell their relatives in different cities, so it's really just a growing
kind of word of mouth.
Yeah, it really is.
In a small town, yeah.
Yeah, which is nice about being a small town.
Right, yeah.
And you feel city government also has you in mind?
Yeah, I believe they support the artists. They really want creative people to be in this community.
I'm Cass Harrington. We've been talking about arts funding and the quality of life in small towns like Jasper. Now we'll hop over to Princeton, an aging town that recently received $22 million in Stellar grants to fund a development like a bicentennial plaza, downtown streetscapes, senior housing cottages, and revitalizing the former Princeton movie theater into a performing arts venue. I spoke with Princeton Mayor Bob Hurst, who wants to turn the quiet downtown into a destination for young workers in particular.
I'm with Mayor Bob Hurst here in Princeton. And actually, if you hear behind us, there's a water fountain. We're sitting in what he calls a pocket park, which is essentially an urban garden is what it looks like. We're kind of sandwiched between two lovely brick buildings, and there's some great landscaping, and the furniture we're sitting on is remnants of a bank that once stood here. Bob, why don't you tell us about projects like these that Princeton is taking on? There's 9 in total. They're actually separate projects totaling about $22 million.
That's correct. We were fortunate enough to get awarded a Stellar program last year. There's two cities that were awarded before us. We were the next two, and there's two that were awarded this year, so there's a total of six. It's a state-run program that has national recognition for what the state's doing. But we applied 2 years ago and finished third, and unfortunately, it's not like a horse race. They only paid off the first two. So we reapplied the second year and were awarded. So we do have some motorcycles in town, it sounds like. But anyway, the nine projects in the Stellar, and then of course we have three projects outside. And within the Stellar project itself, we have a senior housing project that's located behind the post office. That's about a $6 million project. The theater project, the renovation of the old theater into a theater and community center, is about a $4 million project, so those are about $10 million. Mm-hmm. We also have three pedestrian and bike trails that will be completed, and these all have to be completed within a three-year time slot. Then we have the downtown facades. There's about 38
and
to 40.
And you said that these facades are actually... They pose a bigger challenge than the other projects. What's been the toughest part about these facades?
I think, and we haven't come to all the details on it, I think because you have so many different individuals. You know, you may have 38 units and you may have 27 individual tenants or landowners or building owners. And so we have to agree on something that is fair to each one of them. One of the other things the state has mandated now is that we do a structural engineering report on every building, which the city is part of their match, and our match basically is 20% of say, 22 million minus 6 million, which would be 16 million. So our match is about $3.2 million, but that includes the structural engineering and includes paying the architects on the facade, the architects mm-hmm. on the theater, and the overall general managers, and the design work on the streetscape, which would be done around the four corners of the square, and the trails and the gateways. So those are the nine projects that are involved.
And you said this is probably the most development happening at one time in Princeton.
Since I've been involved in town, and I got here in the early 70s, I was on the city council from 88 to 92, and then the previous mayor that passed away asked me to run in 2004 for city council, which I did, and when she passed away, I was caucused in as the 31st mayor. But the only other projects that were done prior to this were the South Main Overpass and the Brumfield Overpass.
Well, and so what other challenges does this pose, all this development? It has, I don't know, is there resistance?
There's any project that you do, it's like Toyota told me once, it's the 80-20 rule. You're going to have a 20% resistance. We don't have that much here, but there are resistance to almost every project we undertake. Some of the people want to maintain stabilization, maintain it like it was in the past, but in order to enhance development, people coming into the area, for our young people to stay, we have to have progress.
You're listening to The Trend on 88.3 WNIN and streaming online, WNIN.org. We're in the middle of our fall pledge drive, and I hope you'll show this program and our station your support by calling the numbers 812-423-5678 or toll-free 1-800-264-9646 or by going online, WNIN.org, on your computer, tablet, or smartphone. Still ahead in this show, we'll hear from a self-proclaimed farm kid who left Princeton after high school and returned to open a farm-to-fork restaurant. She's happy about development in town, but the costs may have grave implications for her small business. But first, back to my conversation with Mayor Bob Hurst at a pocket park in downtown Princeton.
Well, we just stopped in Jasper this morning, and that was something that the mayor there had said as well, that this is about looking into future investment and future returns on that investment.
Yeah, and like we talked before, investments, they cost money. They cost the taxpayers money, but the money that's granted, it's like if I gave you a dollar, would you give me back 20 cents? And the answer to that is absolutely. I mean, I'll take 80 cents on the dollar at any time for any project. And the other side of that is if we don't get it, it'll go to, I won't pick on Jasper, but it could go to Jasper, it could go to Boonville, it could go to Vincennes, so we want it here.
Yeah. And so you mentioned Toyota. What does this have anything to do with keeping employees and talent in that industry?
Yes, Toyota, we picked up about 1,100 employees throughout the area in the last 5 years, not just at Toyota. Toyota has a recent expansion where they're going to have 200 to 300 more on the Highlander, but we've lost some of the original people that worked at Toyota. Originally, it was 23% in Gibson County. It's down to about 21%, but Toyota employees live in Illinois, they live in Kentucky, they live in Vanderburgh County, Warwick County, you know, Knox County, Dubois County, so but we want to capture some of them back, basically to help our tax rate and our tax base.
Mm-hmm. So it is to keep them here.
Absolutely.
Yeah. How, if it's not obvious, how would bike trails and, you know, more cityscapes or how does that affect it?
I think one of the two other things we've done in the city is the new high school course. That was about a $40 million project, and then the new emergency room at the hospital. And I think we've talked before that generations coming in look for amenities sometimes before they take a job. They look at some of the times they look at how the cemeteries are taken care of. You know, and when we have a new theater, performing arts theater, when we have a new theater to go to, new restaurants, three or four new bike trails, pocket parks, I think that's going to be a natural draw, at least for the younger generation.
Mm-hmm. Is that a discrepancy from previous generations?
Well, I think they have different objects and different things in mind. I mean, they're more technologically smart than my generation was. If I have a problem with a computer, I call my son in, or I call somebody younger to fix it. I mean, I just get on it and use the computer itself. Now, there is our bell to the courthouse behind us. That courthouse has been the center of Princeton for years. I think we had a fire at one time. And when we built that gazebo, we found about 20-foot diameter pits, and there's one around each corner of the square. There was one back here behind the pocket park, and what those were used for was they filled them with water, and when they brought the mules up, they put the hoses in there to fight the fires if they had them. This is back 100 years ago or more. So the courthouse, of course, is the key center of the city of Princeton.
Yeah. What I love about this story and what we've heard today and even just sitting right here in this park is almost the collaboration of old and new, and just you're reusing a lot of old buildings in town and freshening up the facades, and it's really interesting how you, in a way, you're maintaining or even highlighting the charm. But, you know, we were just talking about the new generation and the bell chimed, and you started talking about the courthouse. That couldn't have been better.
Well, and we're going to, VPS is doing the architecture on the Bicentennial Plaza, and a couple of the things, we're sending them out to where we have these materials stored. So they're going to see if they can use part of that. Tahara City is our friendship sister city. The mayor over there, I just sent him
in
Japan. I just sent him a letter, and we're going to try to put a little garden area in the Bicentennial Plaza that celebrates the proclamation between Princeton and Tahara by maybe planting a tree or some plants from Tahara. We also may celebrate the, we had a Civil War unit here, several of them, one that was all black. We may put a monument, small one, to the Civil War, and then we may put a schematic on the concrete or in the brick of the history of Princeton.
As you know, Evansville, we just passed a vote on a convention hotel, which was a big indicator of development, economic development in the future, and it was tough. It took a long time to get there. What has been the biggest challenge with these projects?
I think coordination. We have a good city council and a good board of works, and they all look to the future, and they 90% of the time vote for progress. They vote for change, which is a good thing. You need to have the backing of your city council and your board of works, or you're not going to get anything done. And Evansville can attest to that, because it took them a while to get the downtown hotel through the city council. And I'm sure there were viable questions that were asked.
Well, to wrap things up, what are you most excited about with these 9 projects?
You know, somebody, they asked me that when the Stellar Committee came down, and I said, it's like a father that has 9 kids. You can't choose any one of them over the other. I mean, and really, they're all exciting. They're all a part of Princeton. I guess from a health-wise would be the bike trails. From an art side would be the theater and the Bicentennial Plaza. And we have 2 cities here, basically. We have the Strip, which goes out toward Walmart and the Showplace. And then we have the downtown core. And one of the things that we try to do here is we want people to stay in Princeton. We don't care if they go to Evansville once in a while or Vincennes, but we like to have everything cohesive in here. So if somebody wants to do something on a Friday night in Princeton, like a car show or that, it's here.
All right. Well, Mayor, thank you so much for talking to me.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. And thanks for coming up. And don't be a stranger. Come back up, because we're going to have a lot of things going on here.
All right. Thank you.
That was me talking with Princeton Mayor Bob Hurst about development projects designed to bring young workers to Princeton. For our final segment, we'll step inside of Sarah Wolf's restaurant, The Farmer's Daughter. Sarah left Princeton after high school to experience mountains, bigger cities, and different ways of thinking. She told me she moved back to her hometown because she realized in order to make real changes in the world, she needed to come back where that change was needed. So she started Farmer's Daughter in hopes of bringing a new approach to local food and local business to her hometown. I'm here at Farmer's Daughter Cafe, sitting at a lovely wooden farm table, sitting across from a pastry case with some very sinful looking things. And I'm seated right next to Sarah Wolf, who's the owner here. And Sarah, I'm particularly interested in how you moved away from Princeton, went to school in Savannah, worked for a little while, and came back. What's your story?
I graduated from Princeton in 1998. I am the youngest of 3 children. I moved to Savannah, Georgia, and attended art school at the Savannah College of Art and Design for about 1.5 to 2 years, at which point I fell in love with cooking. I decided I was interested in making a living by my craft as opposed to struggling as an artist, I suppose. I moved to Bloomington, Indiana, where I undertook my cooking education a bit more seriously. I am self-educated. I have never attended culinary school. I made a point of always working as many jobs as I could and avoiding management so I could continue to cook. Because if you were managing people, you were not cooking and learning food. I was fortunate enough to work for not only a wide variety of people, but also a variety of people who were extremely skilled and talented at what they do. In 2003, I took an extended hiking trip with my then husband, John Sherfield. We decided that we wanted to move out west, so we moved to Bellingham, Washington, which is about 2 hours north of Seattle. There, I was fortunate enough to really get immersed in a culinary experience by working for a small local company. We sourced almost exclusively locally, and we're really dedicated to the farm-to-table movement, and we were fortunate enough to have our kitchen right next to the farmer's market. As a farm kid myself, it was truly, it felt like I was closing the loop as a cook. I had this kind of interesting experience being raised as a farm kid in a very industrial ag landscape, becoming a cook and learning how to use the ingredients that were around me. The exception being that most industrial ag ingredients you can't actually directly eat. You can't go out and eat any of your field corn. Mm-hmm. So I was interested in learning about that space in between where our food comes from and how it gets to the table is what really sparked my interest in it.
So how did you get back here to Princeton?
That's a good question.
quite a traverse across the country.
Right. Well, we lived out there for 4 years in Bellingham, my ex-husband and I. And at one point we decided we wanted to start a family. And I was also terribly, terribly homesick.
Oh, wow.
Bellingham's a beautiful place. It's got mountains and rivers and oceans. It's gorgeous, but it was not home. I missed my family, and I missed being home. And we also had a strong interest in farming and did not want to get quite that settled down out there, and I also wanted to raise my children to see the grandparents as much as possible. Mm-hmm. So we moved back home in 2007, and in 2008, we had our daughter, Hattie, and in 2009, just a few months after she was born, we started opening the restaurant.
My gosh.
We were given a tremendous opportunity here. The lady who owned the building previous to us had the space available. She couldn't rent it for at least a year or two. It had sat empty, and she finally was desperate enough. She said, look, I don't care. Just put something in there, and we'll figure out the rent. So we didn't pay rent for the first year, and after that, it was, you know, $200 a month. It was something quite minimal. We paid rent for 2 months, and then we bought the building.
Wow. Oh, my gosh. That's huge to come back home and start a business after having a child.
Yeah. I'll never do it again.
But after, I mean, that's an intimidating thing to take on, especially with something so relatively new. I guess
Correct.
You could argue it's age old, but a concept that hasn't really quite taken off here. Was that frightening?
To a certain extent, but at the same time, I felt like we were just cooking the food that I was raised on and where it came from. So to me, it was not a giant step at all. It was quite easily saying, you know, my parents and grandparents grew up cooking out of their yards and out of their gardens. They foraged. We went mushroom hunting. We had chickens. But it wasn't like we were pioneers doing something crazy. That's just the way that you lived. And my family had always done this. So for me to grow up as a cook and to look around me and to source locally felt like a very natural thing. The other way that we try to explain it to people locally is that we're trying to keep our money as close to us as possible. Why on earth would I buy an apple from New Zealand and ship it across the world when there's perfectly delicious apples grown within 30 miles? And a lot of times you just have to look, or you just have to ask. It's one of the beauties of being a farm kid. Not only do we know a lot of farmers, but my mother is a crop insurance adjuster, so she spends a lot of time traveling around and meeting and talking with farmers who often have an orchard or a side project of organic beef. That's how we came across Hassenauer Farms, which has been one of our longest lasting and committed food supplier relationships. We've been with Hassenauer Farms from day one. We get our beef and pork from them, and we're very, very passionate about sticking with them.
You've got a relationship with these suppliers. So you're breathing new life into your town square.
That's what they say.
Yeah. But how does the city respond to you being here?
I feel like we've turned a corner in having to explain ourselves. Whenever you explain that we're trying to keep our money local, people tend to get it. We've actively avoided using words like organic. It's not necessarily always understood here, or worse yet, it is misunderstood. Or explaining that just because we have a pasta dish that doesn't have meat in it, it does not mean that our entire restaurant is vegetarian. On the contrary, we use a lot of meat, and it's locally sourced. So we often have linguistic struggles when people are unfamiliar with a word or a product. But on the other hand, you know, we've been making and selling quinoa salads like nobody's business, and people love it. It's delicious. Mostly I've learned to take the gamble and to roll the dice on it.
So other young people moving back in town, are you seeing that happen more often?
I am. One of my employees actually is opening up her own restaurant, and she moved back home about a year ago from a larger city as well, and she'll be opening here hopefully soon. In addition to Turner Martial Arts, there I also have a classmate who runs a veterinary clinic. I know I'm going to forget some classmates or friends who are my age who have businesses, so forgive me, guys. There's the chiropractic office, Gibson County Chiropractic, which is on the east side.
But in other words, yes. People yes. are moving back.
I think so. You know, it's really cheap to live here. It is extraordinarily cheap to live here. You do pay a price for that. You know, it can be very lonely.
Then how... I guess with the new projects that the city's taking on, what does that have particular interest for you?
I suppose the Bicentennial Square down the street, that's going to be interesting, as is the theater project. I have great hope for that. We have a lot of local talent, and our theater company works incredibly hard to showcase that talent. We also have a variety of side theater projects that kind of dovetail with those things that aren't necessarily associated with those groups, but are side projects that people feel passionately about and want to continue to attract youth to. I do think it's working. I don't know. I know that people are quite divided about the funding itself and where those funds are going to be allocated and what is fair to the theater and what is fair to the business owners and what is fair to the individual citizens. My feeling of it is that I will dovetail any aesthetic needs with the historic requirements. I have almost no objections. If I can match the funds, I will do so. I'm skeptical that I will be able to do so.
You're skeptical that you can afford yes. the requirement?
Correct.
And you're talking about the facade?
Yes, the facade work specifically. I think it's a good thing. You know, I'm not saying that we shouldn't do it necessarily. I just, me as a young business owner,
a lot.
Anything is a lot of money. It's not just a matter of a few thousand dollars, you know, it's significant. However, it's a fantastic deal, you know. My numbers were significantly more than I had anticipated.
What were your numbers?
My work was going to cost $185,000, and at the 20% matching, that would be $37,000. It's a great deal. I cannot afford the 37. If it was at 5%, I totally don't remember the math on that. It would be better.
You appreciate the project, but it's just
sure.
too much.
I do appreciate the project. I've heard had other business owners say that they don't like what they want to actually do to their building. I don't have any of those objections. It's more like, I would love to do this. I do not have the funds to do so.
That was Sarah Wolf, the owner of Farmer's Daughter, a farm-to-table restaurant in Princeton's downtown. As that town square braces for new changes aimed to attract young workers, there's one change ahead that isn't in the city's development plans. Sarah is selling her restaurant to spend more time with her daughter. So there will be setbacks as communities work toward a higher quality of life for their residents. Sarah Wolf's decision means that one of downtown Princeton's most innovative supporters is taking a step back, at least temporarily. But what we have learned today is that communities are waking up to the fact that quality of life and funding for things like the arts are key to future growth and survival. There have been some successes, but there is often opposition to public funding for these types of initiatives. But these are important issues, so one thing you can be sure of, we'll keep you updated right here on The Trend. If you want more information about a person or project mentioned on today's program, visit The Trends page at WNIN.org. If you liked a song you heard on today's show, you can find the playlist on our website. The Trend is a production of WNIN in collaboration with the Evansville Courier and Press. This episode was produced by myself with help from Ryan Reynolds at the Courier and Press. Tony Voss provides production support, and the theme music was written by the talented Jeffrey Osman. I'm Cass Harrington. This is WNIN-FM, Evansville, Henderson, and Owensboro.